I day for at least 15 years, and I have no doubt it is the number one reason I am healthy and able to do the work I do. This once-in-a-lifetime organic masterpiece contains over 15,000 different nutrients in each little green capsule. In these extremely difficult, stressful times for the human body, it is not possible to achieve good health and fight disease by eating the commercially produced big ag products called the Great American Diet. These plants are grown in nearly nutrition-free soils and are dosed with untold numbers of toxic, carcinogenic chemicals, deadly pesticides, and herbicides. And now we have to worry about mRNA and GMO components in these non-organic foods. Get off the train to poor health and suffering and go to the Bio Superfood banner on Rentz.com and give your body the gift of life and great nutritional health. You deserve it. All right, here we are. Hour two. Juggling. In case you don't know, and in case you're new, our opinion has been for 4 years this February that a hell of a lot of people are on the road to a much earlier death than they would have ordinarily been expecting without the injections. We also think that getting the synthetic bioweapon virus can cause damage that will lead to the same shorter lifespan than one would normally expect. And now it does seem that people are dying all over the place from dozens of different causes of death. Remember, the medical examiner or the doctor can put whatever they want on these certificates of death, and they'll put, you know, heart failure, kidney failure, CJD, but they'll never say anything about, did the patient take a shot, or how many times did they take shots, or how many infections with COVID did they encounter? These are critically important issues which are being hidden and brushed away. No one's allowed to talk about them. So we're going to talk tonight about copper to start things off with. Now, Erica was the first person to present about the dangers of copper supplementation. You get plenty of copper usually in a routine diet, and that copper can cause all manner of problems in the body and is. Copper is not your friend. Now, that said, there are people online who are raving about copper supplements. You've got to take more copper. Bullshit. No. The science does not back that. It's not true. So be very careful about who you follow and who you quote out there, because it can cause you to have some real serious problems. You must take it easy. All right. Did they let you in the door? Are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, good. I told them, let the girl in, the girl with the pink hair, let her in.
It's purple right. Today.
That's, well, whatever. Glad to have you back, and our friends are out there waiting to find out what's wrong with copper. Well, we've told them, you've told them before. We're going to tell you again, because it is not a good thing. Now, we can start this video anytime you'd like, or if you want to just set the stage for it, we'll jump in.
All right. Well, so this this video here is a couple months old, and it features a Danish physician, a doctor, I'm probably going to mangle her name, Vibeke Manish.
Boy, and, that's exactly what I would have said. Exactly. We think a lot.
And she has, you know, caught on to the, well, the government overreach, let's call it, from the very beginning of the plandemic, speaking out against it. And, of course,
government
was
overreach.
Censored.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. That's a euphemism for tyranny.
Yes.
And so she's been tracking numbers, keeping track of statistics, looking at them very carefully, and, you know, making the case for stopping these injections. And this particular conversation regards the VAERS reports, and she notes that about 75% of the VAERS reports, now these are people who have been injured by these injections, are from women. And, you know, frankly, I don't think that's a coincidence.
25. That's a big stat. 75%
yeah.
women, 25% men, vax injuries. Not good.
And so she, you know, wants to know why. You know, shouldn't we be looking at this? Well, you know, we're not really looking at anything, or they're not looking at anything, because they don't want to know. That's my contention. But I have some theories as to why most of the adverse events are pertain to women. So we can play, you know, a couple minutes of this and then do
sure.
our commentary.
Let's also just kind of mention that women were first to begin to manifest injury symptoms with these shots. They were the majority in the beginning. Monthly
mm-hmm.
problems, a lot of different issues. And it does seem that we must remember that, yes, genocidal weapons. Yes, also weapons of sterilization. And we've made that point many times as well. These will sterilize a man and a woman, these shots, in no time at all, from all the work we can cite.
So, yeah, it sure seems so. I mean, they are absolutely endocrine disruptors. Whether, you know, it's permanent remains to be seen.
Right. All right, here we go with Dr. Vibeke Manish. That's V-I-B-E-K-E, in case you were interested. Not many of you are, but that's what it is. Here we go.
Like, can we trust it, and are they lying to us, and what did they put in it? But another thing, I think there's two aspects in our study, I think, is new findings, which we didn't look into in the Danish. And one thing is the difference between the sexes. That, you know, we looked into the Swedish data and showed that 75% of the reported side effects in Sweden was from women. And there you are again. How can you have such a sex difference without doing anything, at least trying to analyze, scrutinize why that difference? Some would say, well, maybe it's because they reported more. Well, you still have a safety signal. Maybe it's because of the bleeding disturbances. That doesn't explain it all, because we looked into the numbers that by themselves also. There's still a difference, a sex difference. But nevertheless, it's a signal which is varying. And then again, you have such a huge sex difference. It's not, you can't just say, well, that's because the women reported or whatever. No, it's a signal, and you need to go and look, you know, more into it and try to find out whether it actually is so that
yeah,
women
so
were
what you're
more
actually saying is
vulnerable.
That what your study also confirmed is what they could see with their own eyes, that the reports are very much skewed towards one sex. And that shows that the tests were not done properly, because there's something going on here.
Well, if the tests weren't done properly, that might not answer the issue. The issue is the majority of women have been targeted. That's the story. I wouldn't go by the tests, and I don't think they overreported. I think both sexes reported problems. And it was Arnie Burkhardt, the late, great Arnie Burkhardt, the pathologist, who made it quite clear that the spike protein will sterilize men. No problem. Done. So this is a weapon of death that covers many bases, not just one or two.
something going on, and you know, and that is the thing. Men and women are not the same, even though you have some boxers who pretend to be a woman, and you know, but it's like and it's so varying, because that's me being a feminist now. But if it was the opposite, I think maybe some of the male politicians would have said, what sign is that? Is this, you know, bad for men? Because in numbers, it seems like it's very harmful for women. And then again, there could be an explanation. We don't have that. But I think that's why you have the databases to look into safety signals. And I'm very upset that they have ignored such a big sex difference, because someone has been sitting with the numbers on a daily basis and have seen that, you know, 75% of all the reported side effects came from women. That's quite a difference. It could be because men are not taking care of themselves or whatever, but you shouldn't start to explain it before you have the proof and the documentation. And another thing which also worries me is that, you know, we know that the reported side effects are, you know, underreported. You know, it's probably only 10 or 15% of all side effects, probably even less. But
now, that's very interesting to hear her say that. We've always been of that mind. A very small number of the side effects have been cataloged, categorized, or are even reported or recognized as being side effects of the vax and or the virus. People get sick, they think it's something else. And the first question any doctor asks any patient should be, how many shots did you have and when was the last one? We're still not to the point where they can take a simple blood draw in an office and test by staining or some other method looking for spike protein. They're still not able to do that. They can do it, but it's a more elaborate process which requires a lab. And I think over-the-counter spike tests, whoever develops the first one is going to make a lot of money. All right, here.
But on the Swedish data, we made that we could see that they have the reports from the earlier years of all side effects being reported to the Swedish Medical Agency. And usually in...
Hey, it's former right. Navy SEAL Kate Courtley.
All right, we got a commercial here. Let me get by it. Okay.
Normal world, so to speak, about, I think, it's 72% of reported side effects came from the medical professions and mainly doctors, only 28% from the patients or the relatives. But with the COVID vaccines, it just turned around so that, I just have the numbers here, though, so that 54% of the reported side effects came from the patient or the relatives, only 46% from the professionals. And that is scary, and that is, like, embarrassing for the medical profession.
Damn right, they're not looking for it. They didn't want to go there. Many doctors don't even ask about your vax status, even to this day. So they just don't want to get involved with it, I guess. All right, is that enough, do you think?
Yeah, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I watch so many podcasters, and this guy who's running this one, probably a very nice guy, but when he's not talking, you know those little things you have in the back of your automobile, the head bobbles?
Yeah.
He's nodding up and down, up and down. It's like a bobblehead. That's what they are. Anyway, people are funny. Okay, so we have here her last statement, relative proof that doctors aren't looking to tie the injections to many rather common issues of bad health, poor health, problems in the physiology of the body. They just don't want to do it. So 54% had to be reported by the patient. I think this is tied to the shot I got. And the doctors came along, in some cases, rather unwillingly, I guess. At any rate, 75% female side effects reported, 25% male. That doesn't mean it's not 50-50. It means that that's what's being reported. Go ahead.
Yeah, it does, you know, just from a casual layman's perspective, it does seem as though women suffer more at the heels of this, at the feet of this shot. Now, given what we know about how the spike protein affects the production of heme, we can start with that. Now, women, because they're women...
Let's tell people what heme is again, just so they know.
Heme is the protein that your body makes in order to carry or transport oxygen. And without heme, you can't really manage oxygen very well.
Right. Hemoglobin, all right, just to give you...
Yeah, that's the hemoglobin. That's the iron-containing protein in the blood that binds to oxygen and then transports it to all of your organs and tissues. And when you can't make heme to be incorporated into hemoglobin, well, that's when you feel tired, and your organs and tissues will suffer because it's not getting sufficient oxygen.
Right.
Now, heme is not the only, the hemoglobin is not the only area where you require heme. You also require heme for myoglobin, which is the oxygen storage form in the muscle. You also need it for neuroglobin, which is in the nerves. You also need it for cytochrome C, which is in the mitochondria, so you need it to produce ATP, your energy. You also need it, very importantly, for the cytochrome P450 enzymes. That's your phase one detoxification, primarily in the liver, but every cell has this to some extent, so that you can detoxify poisons, both internal poisons that you generate through your metabolism and then any external poisons that you're exposed to. So when you don't have sufficient...
So heme is a vital protein. Where is heme made in the body?
Primarily in the bone marrow, because so much of it is transported or demanded in the blood.
Gotcha.
But the second place is the liver. So it's about, from what I've read, about an 80-20 ratio, 80% in the bone marrow, 20% in the liver. But, you know, don't let that fool you in terms of how vital heme is for proper liver function. Because, again, if you cannot make these detoxification enzymes, well, you're going to become toxic. Things aren't going to run very well. And you can't make ATP, so you're going to feel tired. And so the cascade of downstream effects of not having enough heme can really take a toll on the body. And so that has been speculated to be one of the reasons why women in general just suffer more in the terms of A, chronic fatigue, two, environmental chemical sensitivities, hormonal imbalances, the list goes on and on, because every month, because of this menstrual bleeding, they have to make more heme. And heme is a 8-step process. It's energy intensive. It can go off the rails at any point along the way, either due to nutritional deficiencies or toxicities. There are known toxins that can disrupt the production of heme. Lead and mercury are two notable ones, but there's others.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, when this goes off the rails, you can accumulate the heme precursors, which are porphyrins, and you have something called porphyria. And now these porphyrins are toxic. And depending on which porphyrins are accumulating, the ones that accumulate early in the process tend to manifest in the liver as extreme pain and neurological symptoms, and the ones later in the process tend to be the cutaneous ones that manifest as sometimes blistering of the skin when it's exposed to light. But the list of symptoms that can go along with porphyria are vast. So you've got a situation where if you're injected with this stuff and your body starts to produce this spike protein, the spike protein itself disrupts the heme biosynthesis pathway. And so since many women are already under duress to meet their physiological needs for heme anyway, you put something like this on top of it, is it any wonder you have a problem? And there's quite a few women. Ones had to have become just excessively sensitive to shedding. That could possibly be attributed to this heme deficiency.
Okay.
So the other
copper.
Aspect too.
Copper.
Yeah. Okay. So women. The female body, because of estrogen and because the biological purposes of women is to be able to support a fetus, requires copper. So the female body, at a certain point during adolescence, begins to produce estrogen, and the estrogen favors the absorption and retention of copper for that purpose. Copper will help grow a blood supply. And the more estrogen, the more copper begins to accumulate in the female body. And because there's so much estrogen dominance or excess estrogen nowadays, women can very quickly become copper toxic at an early age. And now the problem is so bad that even babies, because of the copper toxicity of their mothers, are born with excess copper, and that includes, unfortunately, the males too. There's baby boys being born with excessive copper.
Where do they store it in the body? Where do men and women?
In the liver. In the liver.
Always in the liver. Okay.
Well, and then to some point in the brain, and that's when you run into a lot of trouble. I mean, not that you can't destroy your liver with copper. A lot of people are losing their livers to copper overload. And iron too will do the same thing. Copper is needed to balance iron, but at a certain point, if you have too much copper, it interferes with the body's ability to utilize iron. So this copper will drive estrogen, which will drive histamine, which again will stimulate the ovaries to make more estrogen, which will stimulate the body to absorb more copper, and you get into this really, really vicious cycle. And copper, excess copper, disrupts so many physiological processes in the body. Number one, methylation. And everybody nowadays is talking about whether or not they have these MTHFR genes and you know, attributing all their problems to a certain, you know, SNP. And, no, it might just be that you're copper toxic. And that can be remedied with, you know, methyl donors, something like SAMe, the universal methyl donor. You can buy that as a supplement. But when you don't have good methylation, efficient methylation, your estrogen becomes toxic, and that it starts to build up again, and it can be converted into toxic estrogen metabolites that drive cancer.
Yeah.
And so we know the spike protein actually will bind to copper. So, you know, these people, especially women...
Hold on. The spike will bind to copper. All right, so you're taking a normal input of copper, and even at that, the spike will bind to copper. If you're taking copper supplementation, you're giving spike even more things to bind to. It binds to many things. But when it binds to copper, does that mean the spike goes on to do what it does and it carries the copper with it? Or is it taken out of circulation and obsessed with dealing with the copper it's taken on and bound to? How does it interfere with the spike's deadly path through the body? Do we know? That's a long question.
I think we have some idea. We had that Chinese paper from a couple years ago that keeps getting updated. This is on a computer model, were determined that the spike on the virus will bind to copper and form the equivalent of hemocyanin, which is a copper.
Uh-huh.
It's like hemoglobin. Hemoglobin contains iron. Hemocyanin contains copper, but they will both bind oxygen. And in this case, You've got the spike acting like a hemocyanin, and so you're actually getting some oxygen in the body from that, and that's what they figured, how these people were able to endure this very, very low oxygen saturation rate,
right.
Because they had oxygen being delivered by the spike because of the copper.
Gotcha. That's pretty crazy.
And, but by the same token, it's also exerting very toxic effects. It's not transporting copper in a normal way.
Understood. And where do we get copper in our diet normally?
Well, copper is, you can get it from the environment. And I always cringe when I see people talking about drinking out of a copper vessel. There have been many studies now that have correlated the use of copper pipes with increased rates of Alzheimer's.
Copper pipes in your home, copper piping to your sinks, copper piping everywhere. Got it.
But it's fairly plentiful in a vegetarian diet. In fact, that's one of the shortcomings of a vegetarian diet, is it tends to be very, very high in copper, but low in zinc. And so when you have just an adverse ratio, too much copper relative to zinc, you can run into a lot of problems because, I mean, so many enzymes in the body need zinc to function. And when copper is high relative to zinc, it can inhibit a lot of those reactions, and methylation being one of them. But let's see, what foods are high in copper? Avocados.
Chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate. Shellfish. Spirulina. Nuts and seeds. And then plus the use of copper sulfate in organic farming. And over in Europe, they tend to use copper sulfate in place of glyphosate. So you actually get quite a bit of residue from copper sulfate being used as a pesticide, herbicide, fungicide on produce.
Got it. Let me ask you this. Let's jump over to the copper proponents. What are they claiming copper does in excess of normal amounts to somehow improve your health? What is their bedrock? What platform are they standing on to say, take more copper?
Well, they're telling people that it's not present in the food supply. And it is.
Oh, it's common.
It absolutely is. It's not hard to get your daily requirement of copper and then some.
Gotcha.
You only need less than 1 milligram to meet your needs. It's a trace mineral.
One
You're not supposed to have
USDA,
milligrams
so
of it.
Yeah, I see.
And having too much of it will drive cancer. And, I mean, we've known that for since the 1960s probably, that, one of the strategies for reducing the probability of metastases in a cancer is decoppering. And there's methods of doing that. And if you look in the literature, there's quite a bit of research right now focused on ways to get copper out of the body for purposes of controlling cancer. So you really do have to wonder what's behind this big push to convince people they need copper, especially women. You know, some of the symptoms of high copper in women, I mean... If you go and visit, not that you'd want to, but for example, there are support groups for women who have been poisoned by copper IUDs. And funnily enough, when you read these sometimes harrowing accounts, they sound an awful lot like shedding. And so that may be some indication of what's happening when somebody is reacting to this vaccine shedding. If they have a high body burden of copper and this spike protein's getting into them somehow and either chelating that copper off of their own body's proteins and then mobilizing it, one of the common symptoms of copper poisoning from IUDs is excessive bleeding and cramping, brain fog, anxiety, hair loss, skin issues, mood changes, joint pain. So I think there's, you know, plenty of reason to suspect that copper is playing a role in some of this illness. And we even have a couple studies from early in the pandemic that were showing that people, I can find the, I'm probably not going to locate it. The more copper somebody had in their body when they came down with COVID,
this.
The worse the outcome.
I remember this. That's right. Don't think necessarily copper and spike together. Just understand that copper can do many things in the body that are not necessarily good, especially if it's in excessive amounts, which you don't want. 1 milligram a day, was that it? One
yeah.
mg? That's yep. tiny. You don't need any more. Okay, we're running a little late here. What do we want to do next? Now, we can. I think what we might want to do is just do a little quick update on prions.
Okay.
You want to do that? We've
sure.
got Dr. Valerie Sim. Now, this is interesting. As all of you know, we have mad cow disease, which is more formally in the medical community known as CWD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Then we have Parkinson's. Then we have Alzheimer's. All three are caused by different types of misfolded proteins. The spike causes normal proteins to misfold. The spike can cause the misfolding of three different types of proteins, one Alzheimer's, one CJD, and one Parkinson's. So the spike can be triggering all three of these things in countless human beings, and is. Now let me just play a little clip here from Dr. Valerie Sim. I hope I have it queued up about right. I think I do. It's not very long. But she'll lay this out, and so just so you hear it from a professional clinician. All right.
And as soon as they turn into the wrong shape, they come up to their neighbor protein that's...
And let me back it up just a bit.
So indeed, CJD is caused by prions. What are prions? Prions basically are proteins which normally exist in our bodies, but they're proteins that misfold. They turn into the wrong shape. And as soon as...
Now, she's not mentioning that spike will misfold any protein it comes into contact with. It's war on proteins as far as the spike is concerned. But she's not going to mention that. She doesn't want to incur the wrath of her professional regulatory body.
They turn into the wrong shape. They come up to their neighbor protein that's normally folded and make it turn into the wrong shape. Now you have two of them stuck together. And then they sidle up to the next one and make it change shape.
Cascade, right? Spike converts one normal protein into a prion protein. That prion misfolded protein goes on and causes the next protein it runs into to misfold and become a prion protein as well. Cascade. These things, if they can end up anywhere, but if they end up in the brain, they're going to start to destroy the brain under the name of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD. The same thing happens with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Here we go back.
And it has this domino effect, right? Spreading this misfolding through the brain. And when the problem is caused by the prion protein, it causes CJD. But if the protein is amyloid beta, it causes Alzheimer's disease.
Spike protein can create an amyloid beta protein by running into it and ruining its whole day.
If the protein is alpha-synuclein, it causes Parkinson's disease. So we have learned that these other diseases, which actually are much more common, they share this same prion-like mechanism of disease where it starts with the protein that misfolds into the wrong shape and spreads that misfolding through the brain, killing the brain.
Okay, that's short and sweet. I think you got it. Understand that shedding of spike will put spike into your system, whether it comes in through your inhalations or through your skin, right through your skin. That's why we constantly try to urge people to minimize their exposure to others who have been injected or who have had the virus. It doesn't matter. Spike will come from both sources. This is a bad situation. And I just wanted to bring everybody up to date on the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. This is a big deal, and it also explains Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Okay? Anything you want to add to that? I'm sure a lot, but that just brings people back up to speed on that. We tend to forget things.
Yeah. I mean, we've known this for a while.
Well, we've been on this for years, literally. Literally years. And
it's interesting that you know, copper is implicated in all of these neurodegenerative diseases as well. And the prion protein isn't just present in the brain. It's present in many, many cells of the body. And it's been called a copper homeostasis protein. So it needs copper to function normally. That's not to say that more is better. But what may be happening is if it cannot bind copper, then that's when you end up with this misfolded, non-functional protein that aggregates and kills the cell eventually.
We want to remember, everyone, too, that prion proteins and the other two types can occur in the body without spike. That's how you've had these diseases over the decades and millennia. They're there. But the spike was either trained or programmed to do exactly what we don't need, and that's to create these three devastating, deadly proteins that get into the brain and destroy the brain.
And, you know, they call it a magnetoprotein, you know, because it will attract metals. You know, and copper loves sulfur, and the spike protein has these disulfide bonds on it that are a magnet for copper. So, you know, in terms of redistributing copper around the body in a detrimental way, this seems to do it.
All right.
You know, don't forget, copper is a metalloestrogen. It's an estrogen mimicker. So it has the ability to bind to an estrogen receptor. And
copper.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it will also interfere with the progesterone receptor, which I suspect is what's happening with this bleeding issue. It's actually interfering with the function of progesterone. And that's exactly what you see with these copper IUDs and to some extent also just plain old birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy in older women.
HRT has always, in my book, been dangerous. You shouldn't. It's you're asking for trouble. That's just my take.
Well, particularly with the synthetic estrogens, they're very powerful, and they're not an exact match for natural bioidentical hormones. And you can. I just read a study not that long ago about a 70-something-year-old woman that was on estrogen replacement therapy and developed copper overload and Alzheimer's.
Well, not good. Remember how many programs we've done on iron. You don't need to go to a bag bar and dose up on iron either.
No, that needs to be, you know, considered carefully. You know, what's happening with the spike, we've talked about this before, it's a hepcidin mimetic, meaning it acts like this molecule called hepcidin in your body, and what it's doing is it's preventing iron from coming in, from being absorbed from the intestinal tract, and iron from leaving a cell. So you're automatically going to have iron trapped inside of a cell, and now if you're bringing copper in by way of the spike, that's doubly bad.
Got it. Yeah. All right. There's another issue that we want to talk about, and that's Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. ALS. We've got a very interesting bit to read on this. How do you want to lay out the ALS conundrum here? How do you want to tie
ALS, it's also known as a motor neuron disease. I can't talk. Right. Motor neuron disease or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, where you lose control of motor neurons. You lose the ability to basically move. And most of the time, though,
your musculature control mechanism breaks down. It's destroyed.
Right. But your mind is fully intact. And probably the best example of that was Stephen Hawking.
Hawking, yeah. What a bad joke. Think about it.
Yeah.
You're trapped in a body that will not function anymore, and you're dying. You're literally watching yourself die.
So ever since COVID, we've had an increase, a dramatic increase, in the number of people developing motor neuron disease, and sometimes it's ALS or an ALS-mimicking disease. Sometimes it may be the result of Lyme disease having been reactivated. There's a big group of people that are pursuing that possibility. You know, people that are afflicted with this right now, they got the COVID shot, or in many cases, just the virus, just COVID, no shots.
Right.
And a short time later, they developed ALS, or at least the symptoms of ALS, and they're testing positive for Lyme, Borrelia, and in many cases, these other co-infections that are just as nasty, Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichiosis. You know, the number of diseases ticks and these biting insects can carry is staggering.
That's huge.
And if you don't have an immune system to keep them in check...
And everyone who's been injected does not have the immune system they once had.
Yeah, the inflammation just really... I guess paralyzes the immune system in terms of being able to sequester.
Now that's a good way to phrase it. It paralyzes your immune system and turns the physical blood into sludge. There's all kinds of ramifications of this. Here, quick question. I'm going to read this. How much of an increase in ALS reports are you seeing in your research? Is it exploding? Is it rising rapidly? It seems to me to be going through the roof. Go ahead.
Yeah. As I said, it's ALS-like. Do they have an official diagnosis? I think that's becoming an umbrella term now, whether it meets the strict definition of ALS or not. These people are losing the ability to walk. A lot of times, these cases of ALS are beginning in the hands and arms, which is called bulbar ALS. Normally, it would start in the feet or legs and then slowly move up. When it starts, you know, above the waist, that's not a good prognosis. That's people tend to decline very rapidly with bulbar ALS.
We're seeing such quick diagnosis to death cases in not
quite
just
as
ALS.
Quick as CJD.
CJD is the king, yeah. That seems to be the number one.
I mean, it's weeks with some of those people.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and read this. There's six graphs on the left side. I'll take the first three, you take the second three, then we'll do the second part.
All right,
this is written by someone who wanted everyone to know the hidden burden of my vaccine injury. In the quiet moments of the night, when the world seems to pause for a breath, I find myself reflecting on the journey that has led me here. As I lay here, my life being slowly claimed by the severe symptoms of what I've been diagnosed with following my COVID vaccination from Moderna, the narrative has taken a turn into a realm of sorrow that words struggle to capture. The physical pain, the loss of my career, my dwindling control over my life, these are burdens heavy enough to bear. Yet the true depth of my despair lies not in my own suffering, but in the heart-wrenching reality that my mother is witnessing this slow descent into darkness. Imagine, if you will, the scene of the Pietà by Michelangelo. The sorrowful face of Mary, cradling her son Jesus in her arms, is an image that speaks to the core of maternal love, the ultimate sacrifice and the boundless grief of watching your child suffer. This iconic image captures the essence of my current reality.
My mother, who has been my rock, my beacon of hope, and my source of love, now has to endure the unimaginable pain of seeing me, her son, deteriorate before her eyes. Each day, as my condition progresses, I see in her the silent screams of a mother's heart breaking. She watches me, her once vibrant and lively son, now bound by the chains of illness, and it breaks her spirit in ways that words can never fully express. This is the part that is most unbearable. Not the loss of my physical abilities, not the loss of my career, the money, not the fear of what tomorrow holds, but the fact that my suffering is amplified by the sight of my mother's suffering. Her pain is my pain. Her tears are my tears. Her fear is my fear. And in this, I find a new dimension of grief, one that is not just personal but shared, a collective mourning for the life that was and the life that might have been. I share this not for pity, not for shame, but for awareness. The ripple effects of my condition extend far beyond my own life. They touch those who love me, those who have nurtured me, and those who now must suffer alongside me.
And it jumps up on the other side. It's a repeat, the first paragraph. And beyond that, it goes like this. To all who read this, know that behind every story of vaccine injury, there is a family, a mother or father, siblings, friends, who are also victims of this unseen battle. We must speak out, not just for ourselves, but for them, for the silent witnesses to our struggles. Go ahead, finish.
Let us not be afraid to share our stories, to demand acknowledgement, to seek justice, and to fight for recognition. Our voices, when united, can create a symphony of change, a movement towards understanding, support, and healing. This post, with the image of the Pieta at its heart, is my call to all those who suffer in silence, to those who watch their loved ones suffer, to those who feel unseen and unheard. Together, we can transform our collective grief into a powerful force for change. For the truth, loyalty, righteousness, and pure of heart. And
there are millions, tens of millions, twenties, hundreds of millions of people on this planet who are vax injured, not necessarily suffering ALS, but as you've figured out by now, there are dozens of pathways that they are going to be forced to go down that have one essential ultimate conclusion, and that is to either annihilate and cripple them or to end their lives. This is what they have done. This is what is not being talked about in the mainstream media. This is what is not being talked about by any of your elected representatives. This is what is being talked about in the past, certainly, by Trump, and by his new Surgeon General, praising Trump, the great leader who has saved 100 million American lives, when in point of fact, he has caused the deaths of probably, ultimately, at least 100 million American lives with this deadly bioweapon injection. It is not a vaccine, should never have been called a vaccine, and is wholesale mass murder. We're not being talked to about that, or informed in any way about what's really been done to humankind. And that is unbelievable, but true.
Yeah, I was just looking for... there are vax-injured people out there right now that have no idea that there are any kind of support groups where they can, you know, at least be... commiserate.
That's right.
I was just trying to find that one. Where did I put it? It's a good reader. This woman came into the group, I don't know, sometime last week, and she had been watching John Campbell's channel, Nurse John Campbell, the episode he did on the Shroud, and I did not watch it, but evidently he mentioned something about Breanne Dressen's support group.
Right.
And this woman heard it and made her way to the group and was literally blown away that, you know, here's this enormous group with people from around the world, you know, vax-injured just like her, sometimes in some degree worse. She was pretty bad. But it was interesting to read what she said, and I'm trying to find that.
You probably have 50 different windows open on your
desktop. If not more.
Yeah.
Let's see.
We have much more information about ALS, which we want to bring to you. We'll do that next week. This is important. It is skyrocketing. It's big. And I can't imagine, frankly, of a much more, they're all horrible. But they all have their own unique satanic edge to them in terms of cruelty. What these people have done to humankind, there is no punishment too cruel for them, all of them. And I count
all
the
right,
people
I've got
who
it.
Have been giving injections out. They're equally as culpable. Go ahead.
All righty. Thank you for accepting my request. Apologies if this post is unacceptable. I wanted to post something as soon as I could. I cannot believe I've only just come across this community last night via YouTube. I am in so much shock. My body, mind was trashed immediately after one J&J shot in March of 2021. I have been so alone in this, nobody believing me, no one to speak to, dismissed by all of my doctors that all my diagnoses these last few years were vaccine-related. I could no longer work as my job was physical, and I still cannot. I'm so grateful to have found you, as censorship is real. I have never once had a recommendation for a video about others like me, not an article, nothing this entire time. Yet the algorithms know me quite well, and nothing has appeared. Still hasn't. I only found this via a video about a shroud for Jesus. I'm so sad and mad right now, especially for how long I've gone this alone and help being censored. I'm in so much shock. The validation is overwhelming and surreal. Thank you for being here, and I'm so sorry for what you've been enduring. Mind blown.
You know,
that's stunning.
Yeah, it's devastating. And this person you just heard from indirectly is, there are countless others suffering in misery, anonymous misery, right now, right this moment. Many are probably listening to this program, which we sincerely hope doesn't sound like the Jeff and Erica horror show, but it's the truth, and that's what journalism is supposed to present. And when you have a government that has created this, allowed this, and is encouraging this kind of horrific death, not just to adults and seniors, but children. What do we have here? What is this planet? What the hell has gone wrong? Evil is real. Good is real. Right now, evil is in control. And that's our fight. We have to oppose that every step of the way. Okay, that's it.
Amen.
Great job. And, we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
And we will pause on that note and come right back with more. Stay tuned.